Radio Prague News. The leadership of the junior coalition party Public Affairs is divided over whether to support a church restitution deal that has become a condition for the continuation of the government. Prague councillors have appealed to state representatives to act on the public initiative to rename Prague's international airport after the late President Václav Havel. And a scientific study on local climate development predicts a marked change by the end of the century. The leadership of the junior coalition party Public Affairs is divided over whether to support a church restitution deal that has become a condition for the continuation of the government. A secret vote of the party leadership on Tuesday morning ended 5-5, and the party is meeting again this evening to resolve the dispute. The senior coalition parties, the Civic Democrats and Top 09, strongly rejected the junior party's conditions on the deal on Monday, saying that failure to support the agreement would damage the government's credibility and amount to a violation of the coalition agreement. Public Affairs has attempted to condition their support for the deal on the integration of certain ministries, which would save the necessary funds, saying that taxpayers should not be made to shoulder the burden. The government reached a deal last year with the country's churches to return 56% of property confiscated by the communist regime. In reimbursement for the rest, they should receive 59 billion crowns plus inflation over a period of 30 years. Prague councillors have appealed to the finance ministry and state representatives to act on the public initiative to rename Prague's international airport after the late President Václav Havel. The initiative, launched by film producer Ferro Fenich shortly after Mr. Havel's death, has received support from the late president's family, and the respective petition has been signed by over 80,000 people to date. Prague City Hall supports the proposal, but has said it is not in a position to see it through, since Ruzyně Airport is not city but state property. The finance minister has promised to table the issue at the next cabinet meeting. The climate in the Czech Republic will undergo a marked change by the end of the century, becoming drier and much warmer, the business daily Hospodářské noviny reported on Tuesday, citing a scientific study on local climate development. The study was undertaken by 50 climatologists from the Czech Academy of Sciences and Charles University over a period of 5 years. Using statistics and climate modelling, they concluded that summers at the end of this century will be up to 4 degrees centigrade warmer than at present. The study predicts that the average temperature in the Czech Republic will increase by 1 degree centigrade in the next 30 years. The main suspect in the biggest cash robbery in the country's history has been tried in absentia and sentenced to 9 years in prison. The Municipal Court of Prague on Tuesday found František Procházka, who is believed to have fled the country, guilty of stealing more than 500 million crowns from the G4S security agency. Procházka's accomplice, Milan Čermák, who was arrested in early 2008 with several million crowns in cash, also received a 9-year sentence, despite pleading innocent. Police provided evidence linking him to the vehicle used in the theft. The government wants to reduce the administrative burden for businesses by 30% by 2014 as compared to the situation in 2005, Prime Minister Petr Nečas said on Tuesday, adding that a series of measures would reduce administrative costs by 22 billion crowns a year. Mr. Nečas said that in 2005, administrative costs reached 73.7 billion crowns and his government had managed to lower them to 62.2 billion in 2010. The cost should drop to 51.5 billion in 2014 when his government's election period ends. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The next few days are expected to be partly cloudy to overcast with rain and snow in the higher altitudes. Day temperatures between 0 and 5 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Bellinger. In today's program, government stability is shaken over disagreement over a church property restitution deal. We'll have details. And a portrait of Leonardo da Vinci never before exhibited outside of Italy goes on view at Spiro Chateau. Then, a little later in the program, stay tuned for Czech History, where we look at the career of the last communist president of Czechoslovakia, Gustav Husák. That's all ahead. Cracks in the three-party governing coalition appeared again this week as the Junior Public Affairs Party resisted approval of a church property restitution deal. For the Senior Civic Democratic and Top 09 parties, the deal is a major achievement that has been years in the making. When Public Affairs, which questions aspects of the agreement, attempted to put conditions on its support, the response, though, was clear. Approve the deal or leave the government. Christian Falvey has the details.
Public Affairs has often positioned itself as the dissident party in the governing coalition, even siding with the parliamentary opposition on occasion. In previous instances, though, the stakes were not as high as with the current issue of church property restitution, which has been under negotiation for the last two decades. Civic Democrat Zbigniew Stanjura told Czech television on Monday why his party has no intention of budging on a done deal.
This agreement was concluded by all three coalition parties, as well as 17 churches and religious organizations. 20 different sides, therefore, came to an agreement that they confirmed with their signatures. And what we are saying is that we're going to respect that agreement both in the government and in parliament.
As per the government's agreement, churches that lost property under communism would receive 56% of it back and get 59 billion crowns in compensation for the rest, payable over a period of 20 or more years. With the finance ministry warning of 30 billion more crowns in budget cuts to come this year alone, Public Affairs now wants to cover this sum by integrating ministries, namely those of the environment and regional development, while at the same time reportedly eyeing a change in the captaincy of the interior ministry that they previously ran. That idea apparently ran straight into a wall at a surprisingly quick meeting of coalition leaders on Monday, as Public Affairs Chairman Radek Jon described.
They gave us an ultimatum saying that if we do not give our unconditional support for church restitution and stop talking about saving money, then the government will fall.
This makes for a high-stakes call for Public Affairs, which has polled at between 2% and 4% since being racked by corruption scandals last year, a position that would leave it no chance of a parliamentary mandate in hypothetical early elections. What's more, should the Junior Party decide to stick to its guns on this issue, Civic Democrats and Top 09 could likely manage a minority government without them. Public Affairs, it seems, therefore, has precious little to gain by swimming against the current. Nonetheless, the party's leadership on Tuesday morning proved disinterested in quietly backing down, stalling 5-5 on whether to support the agreement. They will meet again in the evening before Wednesday's cabinet vote on the agreement.
Christian Falvey there reporting on cracks appearing in the ruling coalition over the proposed church property restitution deal. If you have an opinion on that deal and would like to comment, please do so by writing to us here at the station. The address is english@radio.cz. Moving on to this story, with its rich history and impressive neo-Renaissance architecture, Spiro Chateau is a big attraction in its own right. But in the course of the next 2 months, it will moreover boast a rare exhibit, the Lucan portrait of Leonardo da Vinci, an alleged self-portrait by the artist, which has never before been shown outside of Italy. Daniela Lazareva has the story.
The oil portrait, which some experts believe to have been painted by the great artist, was discovered 3 years ago by art historian and gallery owner Nicola Barbatelli in southern Italy in the private collection of an old aristocratic family. The estimated age of the portrait is about 500 years, and its owners originally thought it to be a portrait of Galileo. If da Vinci's authorship is ever confirmed beyond doubt, it would be only the second known self-portrait by da Vinci, the other being a red chalk drawing at the Biblioteca Reale in Turin. Da Vinci or not, the portrait is of immense value and was accompanied to Prague by the owner of the gallery which lent it, the said Nicola Barbatelli, and for security reasons travelled in the cockpit of the plane. At Prague's Ruzyně Airport, it was awaited by members of a rapid deployment squad and transported to Zbiroch Chateau, located in the Brdy forests in western Bohemia. The chateau's owner, Jaroslav Pacha, says the efforts to obtain the painting for a short, exclusive exhibition took over 18 months, and he's extremely proud to be able to exhibit the masterpiece, whether or not it is a true Da Vinci.
When I signed the contract on the loan, both with the gallery in question and the Ministry of Culture, the description of the work said, Attributo Leonardo da Vinci, meaning ascribed to Leonardo da Vinci. The painting is of immeasurable value, and the security measures surrounding it are unprecedented. At this point, we are keeping these security details under wraps.
The oil painting is expected to attract thousands of visitors from both at home and abroad, among them dozens of art historians who remain divided over whether this is an authentic Da Vinci. Art historian Milena Bartlova will head out, firmly convinced she will not come face to face with a work of the great master.
From what I've been able to read about this painting, and from some of the reproductions I have studied, this painting has nothing but absolutely nothing to do with Leonardo da Vinci.
For those who want to judge for themselves or simply admire the precious work of art, the exhibition at Zbiroch runs from January 13th to March 18th.
Daniela Lazarova reporting there on a fascinating exhibit of a portrait of Leonardo da Vinci, possibly a self-portrait, but whether it is authentic or not, well, it'll still be guaranteed to generate a lot of interest. The last communist president of Czechoslovakia, Gustav Husák, became the symbol of the spineless regime that ruled the country after the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia. Himself a political prisoner in the 1950s, he oversaw the persecution of opposition activists in the 1970s and 80s. An intellectual who supported the reforms of the Prague Spring turned into the Soviet Union's lackey. In this edition of Czech History, Jan Richter looks at the life of Czechoslovakia's last communist president, Gustav Husák, on the 99th anniversary of his birth.
Slubujem na svoju čest a svedomie.
The year is 1975. The place is Prague Castle. Gustav Husák is being sworn in as the president of Czechoslovakia, 7 years after the Soviet invasion of the country. The 65-year-old Slovak politician reached the top of the power pyramid and was to remain there in the dual position of the Communist Party leader and the country's president for the next 12 years. Gustav Husák became the face of what Czechs know as the normalization, a period which saw the tightening of communist rule following the defeat of the Prague Spring of 1968. His picture hung in every classroom in Czechoslovakia, and his New Year's addresses, delivered year after year in an odd mixture of the Czech and Slovak languages, were a ritual that reflected an overwhelming atmosphere of resignation. Historian Jan Adamec is the editor of Prague Cold War, a website dedicated to the history of the 20th century.
This was kind of an indication that the normalization, this cleansing process, is over. It's done, and now we have to build socialism. He was a former representative. He visited countries. He was kind of a face of Czechoslovakia. He strictly obeyed what Soviets wanted in the foreign policy and also in the inner party policy. This was kind of a 10 years of political stagnation, and personally, it was a kind of a loneliness for him. The contemporaries who were around him testified that he was quite alone in the Prague Castle, sitting in the office, not to say doing practically nothing, but the practical politics was over.
Handpicked by Moscow to replace the reformist communist leader Alexander Dubček and to bring his country back under full domination of the Soviet Union, Gustav Husák was not an obvious choice. Jailed by his party for 10 years in the 1950s, he supported the reform efforts of his fellow Slovak Dubček. Historian Zdeněk Doskočil explains what made the Soviets choose Husák.
Oni se přesvědčili, že Husák přes tu proreformní retoriku.
They found out that despite his pro-reform rhetoric of 1968, he remained an orthodox communist whose ideas of the regime did not deviate from the Soviet model, and they knew he respected Soviet dominance in the Eastern Bloc. But it was also important that he had been a victim of the political trials of the 1950s, which was to demonstrate that even people like him could again play a role in society. They thought it would calm public concerns that the persecution of the 1950s would return, because Husák experienced it firsthand. At the same time, his pro-reform past was to placate the intellectuals. It was also good for the Soviet leadership, which could use his activities in 1968 to keep him under control.
A zároveň zase pro Sověty to bylo výhodné, že Husákovi mohli tuto minulost předhazovat a tím ho držet uzdi.
In April of 1969, Gustav Husák replaced Alexander Dubček as the leader of Czechoslovakia's Communist Party. Some people thought he would try to defend some of the liberties of the Prague Spring, but Husák was fully aware that was not the way to go. After the brutal repression of rallies protesting against the Soviet occupation, Husák launched extensive purges in all sectors of the society. A year later, he gave a famous speech calling for purity in the Communist Party.
Nech odpadne, čo je kolísavé. Nech odpadne, čo je oportunistické. A nech v tej strane zostane, čo je pevné, čo je charakterné, čo chce...
But why did Gustav Husák become the chief collaborator with the occupiers? Zdeněk Doskočil believes he had illusions about his role as the head of the new regime and thought the Soviet would, sooner or later, leave him room to maneuver.
Husák v podstatě neměl příliš ujasněnou nějakou představu koncepční změn.
Husák did not have a very clear idea of the changes he would carry out. I think he knew he would have to subdue any opposition to the Soviet occupation and hoped that in return he would be able to pursue his own policies at home. But for a variety of reasons, that space never opened up for him, as Moscow was not interested.
Some of the reasons why Husák never succeeded in pursuing more autonomous policies had to do with his political style, according to Zdeněk Doskočil, who says he was very strong at the time of crisis, but lacked perspective and strategic concepts.
Husák byl politik pro, řekněme, já bych to nazval, byl politikem dynamického období.
Husák was a dynamic politician and did his best at times of great struggles. That's why he shone in the 1940s and then again in 1968 and 69, when the situation was changing from one day to the next, and it was necessary to react swiftly. But when the turbulence passed and instead it was time for strategic concepts, Husák failed because he was not that type of politician.
Husák selhával, protože takovým typem politika nebyl.
Husák's background was different from many other prominent communists in Czechoslovakia. He joined the party as a law school student in Bratislava. While most of the party leaders in Bohemia and Moravia were arrested during the war, Slovak communists were able to operate legally in the independent Slovak state, a satellite of Nazi Germany. Husák's rise to power began during the Slovak National Uprising. He was the author of a memorandum suggesting Slovakia should become part of the Soviet Union. But that did not spare him from the purges of the 1950s following the communist seizure of power. As a leading member of the Slovak branch of the Communist Party, he was arrested in 1951 and put to a showcase trial as an alleged bourgeois nationalist. He endured harsh torture while in jail, but was one of the few political prisoners who never gave in, which saved his life, according to Zdeněk Doskočil.
The fact that they didn't break Husák saved his life, and the lives of others who were tried with him. When he came back from prison, he was still a communist at heart, but in Prague he was still seen as an enemy, so he worked as a manual laborer and was under the discreet surveillance of the secret police.
A byl pod diskrétním dohledem státní bezpečnosti.
Less than 10 years later, Gustav Husák rose slowly to the top of the communist hierarchy. After he became president in 1975, it was the regime he represented that put opposition activists in jail, including his successor at Prague Castle, Václav Havel, who between 1979 and 1984 spent 4.5 years in prison. Jan Adamec from the Prague Cold War website project says Husák saw imprisonment as part of the political struggle.
For him, there was nothing bad to jail, for example, the enemies of the state or the anti-communists or the people who were against the communist idea. His imprisonment he viewed as a mistake. As a mistake which needed to be corrected, but there's nothing bad with the communist regime, nothing bad with the communist idea. The imprisonment was harsh. He spent several years alone in the cell, but he didn't view it as something which was unjustified in the sense to use jail or imprisonment against the enemies of the state.
Gustav Husák was deeply shaken by the tragic death of his second wife, who was killed in an airplane crash in 1978. Political stagnation, the torpidity of the society, along with his deteriorating health, made him little more than a figurehead of the communist regime that was slowly crumbling. In 1987, he was replaced as the leader of the party by the bizarre character Miloš Jakeš, who almost immediately became the source of many popular jokes and who hardly anyone took seriously. Historian Zdeněk Doskočil says Gustav Husák was despised, but not hated.
Husák nebyl oblíben, byl spíš pohrdán a naděj na něj hladili, řekněme, dosti.
Husák was not popular by any means. I think he was despised and people viewed him with bitterness. But unlike some of the hardliners like Bilák, he was a man of certain intellectual qualities, and I think that in the eyes of many people, he was not a completely negative figure.
Zcela v očích většiny lidí zcela černá figura.
People who lived through the normalization period will probably remember Gustav Husák as a detached old man with thick glasses, reading his New Year's addresses at his office with a clock in the background. There is in fact a popular YouTube video in which parts of the opening sentences from his various addresses are put into one phrase, which still makes sense and could be delivered in any year during his long, if lonesome, term as president. But in Slovakia, his legacy is seen very differently. It was under his term that Czechoslovakia became a federation, and the Slovak society saw its living standards very much improved in the 1970s and 80s. Jan Adamec again.
Husák means much more for Slovaks than for Czechs. There's much more myth and much more prejudices about Husák within the Slovak society. I think for Czechs, Husák is more symbol of normalization and the change of opinions after the Soviet invasion than anything else. But for Slovaks, there's more dimensions. There is this allegedly martyrdom defending the Slovak interests, and then it is the case of federalization, and then it is, I would say, it's pride than a poor boy who was born in a very poor conditions managed to get to become a president of Czechoslovakia.
But at the same time, Jan Adamec says young historians and researchers, unaffected by their personal experiences from the regime of denormalization, see Gustav Husák from a different perspective.
I think there's one trend which was visible from 2009 and when it was more visible after the funeral of Václav Havel. This is kind of a reconsideration of the years after 1968 to 89. This is say that the picture becomes more diverse. It's not so much black and white as it was in 90s, like this communist evil and the suppressed, fearful society. But the picture is really much more colorful, and there are a variety of colors in this picture.
Gustav Husák resigned as president on the 10th of December 1989, 19 days before parliament elected Václav Havel as his successor. Before that, he met some of the opposition leaders for the first time when he appointed them as members of the new post-communist government. Gustav Husák died 2 years later in his native village of Dubravka, outside the Slovak capital.
That edition of Czech History by Jan Richter brings us to the final portion of today's program, which is the ABC of Czech with Pavla Horáková and Vladimír Tax.
And welcome to another edition of the ABC of Czech. My name is Pavla Horáková and as usual I'm joined by Vladimír Tax.
Dobrý den.
The letter for today is F and the topic, foreign influences. No language exists on its own, and Czech, just like other languages, has been exposed to various influences over the centuries from both the country's neighbours and languages more distant or even extinct. When the first Slavic tribes started settling in this region, they took over a number of words and place names from its previous inhabitants. These are words such as
beran,
ram,
chmel,
hops, or
železo,
meaning iron. The largest part of today's Czech vocabulary is of Slavic origin. Some old and basic words are even shared by other Indo-European languages, such as the word
sestra,
meaning sister,
myš,
for mouse, or
mléko,
for milk. Even in the earliest days, the influence of neighboring Germanic tribes was apparent in the language. Words like
kníže,
meaning prince, in which you can hear a faint echo of the Germanic König or king, are thoroughly domesticated, and hardly anyone would look for their origin abroad. With the spread of Christianity, a number of Latin, Greek, and Hebrew words were introduced into the language, for example,
mše,
for mass, or
sobota,
for Saturday. Latin was also the language of learning and contributed with expressions such as
škola,
school,
žák,
for pupil, or
papír,
for paper, which are no longer felt as foreign. With the development of trade and crafts in the Middle Ages, a lot of German expressions found their way into the Czech language through direct contact, similarly to words pertaining to military matters. These came not only from German, but also from French, Spanish, and Italian, words like
armada,
for army, or
cavalerie,
for cavalry. During the Renaissance and Baroque period, Italian provided words from the area of architecture, music, finance, and cuisine, such as
cupole,
for dome,
piano,
for piano,
banka,
for bank, or the words
salát, celer, petržel,
for salad, celery, and parsley, respectively. Culinary expressions were coming also from French, together with terms concerning beauty, etiquette, and diplomacy. Technical and scientific terms in Czech typically come from Latin or Greek and are shared by many other languages.
Biologie,
for biology,
rádio, televize,
for radio and television,
elektřina,
for electricity, to name but a few. In the 20th century, English became the major source of new expressions in Czech. For example, an abundance of sports terminology was adopted during the 1920s. The years of communism introduced many Russian words, referring mostly to military and economic matters. Today, English remains the chief source of new words in the fields of modern technology, politics, entertainment, and lifestyle. Czech is open to new influences today, unlike some 200 years ago, when the language was still fighting for its place in the sun and linguistic purism was considered a condition for its survival. And that's all we have time for today, I'm afraid, but please join us next time for the letter G and greetings.
Naschledanou.
Bye-bye.
The ABC of Czech brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you for joining us this day, and join us again soon.